Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 47. We're covering the 2018 CIMB Classic on the PGA Tour and the Sky Sports British Masters on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Preview at Golf Betting System, and with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Evening, Paul.
Evening, Steve. How you doing?
Very good, thank you. Could have done with the winner. But can't we all? Yeah, exactly. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk. I'm available at Bamford Golf on Twitter. Paul's handle is at Golf Betting. We are also available on, in terms of outlets for the podcast, Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, and Podtail. We are also now available, as from last week, on YouTube as well. So this podcast is available via the Golf Betting System channel on YouTube. And already had a good listenership on that last week. So, yeah, if you want to listen to this on YouTube, it is now available. Naturally, subscribe, follow the podcast, and spread the word. Also on YouTube, our regular golf betting show, which I present out every Tuesday morning UK time. If you could watch those outputs, those shows, that would be fantastic. We are trying to get 2,000 subscribers by the end of November when we close down for the winter. So if you could come across, watch the Golf Betting Show on YouTube and help us to get to 2,000 subscribers. All of our content is free, and naturally all of these signals, the amount of likes and subscribers on YouTube and the ratings that you give us on iTunes all help to keep our content free. Isn't that right, Paul?
Absolutely, yes. So, likes, reviews. It'd be nice to get some reviews on iTunes, actually. We've got a handful, but
just 12 on there, yeah.
Yeah, just
four and a half.
Let us know what you think, guys. Just let us know what you think. And, we can take a bit of criticism if need be, but if not, if there's stuff that you'd like to see on the podcast or like stuff you'd like us to talk through, then by all means leave a comment and we can consider it accordingly.
It tends to be four and a half, the reviews on iTunes, when Barry O'Hanrahan's on the show. But this week he's gone AWOL. And we received a late WhatsApp message from Barry last night saying that he was actually in Las Vegas. Now, and I'm pretty sure, you know, that I saw him in that Conor McGregor melee at the end of the fight. I think he was in that cage. He said that he wasn't at the fight. I'm not sure I believe that.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a very late decision for him to fly over to Vegas.
But how late can you make it?
Yeah. Good luck to him. And good luck to you, Barry, on the tables, if you're listening to the podcast.
He'll be listening, don't you worry about it. Good luck to you, Barry. I hope you're enjoying yourself out there. Right. Do we want to talk about last week? It was a bit of a non-event, really, wasn't it?
It was a challenging one. I got a little bit back on Harrington. A little bit of a slice of the each way because he finished T7 in the end. As much as I was bemoaning his final round because he parred the final nine holes, 69 was still one of the best scores out there on the day, bogey free. He did manage to scrape that each way reduced payout. One more birdie in any of those final nine holes and he gets a full payout, which was a bit disappointing, but I think you have to take whatever you can get in this game, don't you? So
I backed him on the exchange. I got nothing back, mate. And to make matters worse, I only went and backed Brant Snedeker after round three.
It's strange, isn't it?
He was five shots ahead at the turn.
Yeah,
last night. Not that I was watching it, but he was five. I'd long gone to bed, but five shots ahead, and just capitulated.
Well, given the position he was in, given the position that Tyrrell Hatton was in, and I know both of them were backed and matched at very low numbers on the exchange in their respective tournaments, and both of them turned over. It was a bit of a surprise, particularly Hatton. Given his affinity to that tournament, how well he's closed the tournaments out in the past, going for the three-peat, just all... all fell apart, didn't it, in his final few holes. A big old win that for Lucas Beauregard as well. Big win.
That must be slightly frustrating because you've been all over him all season.
Well, Lucas, yeah, I mean...
What price was it?
50s you could get.
So 50 to 1 winners, both sides of the pond. Yeah. Because Tway was 50s.
Yeah, that price on Tway feels too short to me, I think.
It was short for the form he had. I'll tell you what, though, it does do for that tournament, Paul. You remember I mentioned the Boise Open?
Mm.
He was a winner there.
It's another rubber stamp on that one, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's frustrating with Berrigar because, as you say, I've backed him a fair amount, and I looked at him as I always do each week, and he'd gone 3 consecutive missed cuts in the Dunhill Links prior to winning yesterday, and I know with him he's taken a massive step forward in his career. He had a similar kind of form line at the BMW PGA at Wentworth this year going in. He had awful course form, and then I think he finished second or third or somewhere in the places. Anyway, he came quite close. And clearly he's done it again. And, you know, perhaps the performance he put in yesterday in the conditions, you know, and I think he would have in his heart of hearts expected the Hatton to have converted anyway. So perhaps in his mind it was going to be kind of a second or a third place finish. But
that was the same with Tway, though, wasn't it? I think it's exactly the same scenario. Because I watched the highlights this morning on the Safeway. And when you're 5 behind at the turn, and I think he was 1 over, he's thinking, well, you know, if I can just dig in a little bit, I'll get a very good paycheck, start the season well. And even on 17, the commentators were saying, oh, it kind of keeps him in the hunt. There was no real thought process going through the minds that Snedeker wasn't going to win it. But no. If you think of he bogeyed 10, 11, 12. I think he had a wedge into 17 and hoiked it long and left. And then he goes and does the cardinal sin on 18, which that is a birdie every day of the week, but don't hit it in that fairway bunker on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And where does he bang it? Straight in the fairway bunker.
Yeah. The head's going at that point, isn't it? You know, it's,
Well, I don't know if you remember when he won that Wyndham Championship. I mean, he was... He looked... he was highly stressed then, and it was really pan that when he made that, you know, he hit it out of bounds on 18, that handed the victory to Snedeker, didn't it? I still think he's worthy of a look this week, you know, Snedeker. He's got perfect course form, but he's never played this event over in the CIMB at this TPC Kuala Lumpur course. But a 33-1, he actually grabs me as being a half decent price.
Yeah, it depends how much that takes out of him mentally, I guess. But
you've seen him before, though, haven't we? You know, he finished second at the Sony Open, lost in a playoff to Fabian Gomez, and then the next tournament goes Torrey Pines, wins, and his wins often come off like second win, that kind of stuff. Anyway, I haven't tipped him this one, but. Well, who should we go with? Should we go with me for a change? Should I go CIMB Classic?
Yeah, go for him.
I always like this tournament. I find it takes the pain away to a certain extent, doesn't it? Because you wake up and you know what the scores are.
You know your fate at 6 o'clock in the morning.
So I'll know my fate on Thursday, catching the train to the British Masters. I'll be like, Paul, I haven't got anyone better than a 68th position out of a 78-man field.
Yeah.
You'll be going, don't worry, someone might shoot a 58.
There's no cut, Steve, so okay, you're not
No cut. So, I mean, it's quite a... This tournament's been around for a long time now. They played it at the Lakes course, I believe it was, but then it moved here in 2013, TPC Kuala Lumpur. Ryan Moore won. We were on him that week at 33-1. It was played from 2010. Ben Crane, I was on him as well with the inaugural one. I actually had a really good record in this 2010. Ben Crane, I had 2011. I snagged Bo Van Pelt, amazingly enough, and then Ryan Moore in 2013. But I haven't snagged any of the recent winners. Pat Perez at 24 under last year. It's Thomas 23 under in 2016. 2015, Justin Thomas 26 under. But we've got a change. This season, because they've gone and changed the greens.
Yeah.
So as of November, which for me seems quite a late start, 10-month renovation of the West Course here at TPC Kuala Lumpur, the much anticipated makeover will see the returfing of the greens from Sea Isle Supreme Paspillum to Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass, with fairways, tee boxes, and rough also changing from Seashore Paspillum to Celebration Bermuda Grass. So how that affects the golf course, heaven only knows. All we do know when they tend to put new greens down is it takes at least a year for them to settle down, so they won't be as soft and as receptive as the Paspulum ones were. But what we also need to say is they have temperatures here year in, year out, of up to 37, 38 degrees in terms of feel-like temperatures Celsius. So there is no way in the world that those greens will not be being absolutely softened and watered as much as possible.
Yeah, well, it's always been a soft track, hasn't it? You know, no matter what conditions it's been played in, even when I used to cover it on the European Tour, it was always soft and receptive.
Yeah,
and clearly that was with the Paspulum greens, and they've changed. And as you say, newly laid greens likely to be a bit firmer. But equally, they're going to have to, you know, these are new greens. They've got to keep them alive, as you say. I expect it will be soft. I expect they'll be doing everything they can to get the greens in the best condition that they can. Whether it is quite as soft as it has been in the past remains to be seen. It does throw a few question marks around the event, the change, doesn't it?
A little bit. Just for listeners, if you're looking for Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass golf courses, and one golf course that really does tie in nicely is Kapalua. Low scoring, Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass. Also Arnold Palmer Bay Hill, that's Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass. The greens at Copperhead, they're a Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. They're mixed in with Poa Trivialis, but they're Tiff Eagle. Honda Classic, Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass. So there's lots and lots of, you know, Tiff Eagle is being used a hell of a lot these days, especially in Florida. The Harbour Town now, they've got Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens. There are a couple I've missed. I believe TPC Sawgrass now is also Bermuda grass, Tiff Eagle. So, you know, if you can find players that putt well on those surfaces, go for your guns, really. It's interesting, though, you never quite know how these changes to the greens are going to actually work out in terms of the scoring required. Mm. So, whether we're going to get down to 24, 25, 26 under this week is up for debate, because I think that there's, you know, with all will in the world, I can't see them being quite as receptive as they were 12 months ago or even 2 years ago when 26 under was the winning score. I mean, that's some seriously low scoring, isn't it?
Yeah, and you put in the preview about some of the changes that they've made over the last few years to make the scoring even deeper. So, you know, some of the scorable holes have been made even more scorable. And, you know, structurally, those holes won't have changed. It's just the actual grass is used on the fairways, rough and up to the greens that will either make it equally more or less challenging. And that will be the thing that's we won't really find out until the tournament kicks off. But, yeah, it's still likely to be a low-scoring event, I think.
We've got a very imbalanced betting market this week. Quite rightly, I mean, at the end of the day, if you're looking at quality here, we're seeing Justin Thomas as a 5-1 favourite. Now, on the basis that he's won here twice, he was a hero for Team USA at the Ryder Cup, and he's playing so consistently at the moment. 5-1's a fair price, isn't it, at the end of the day? He's by far the favourite. He could walk away with this.
Yeah. And statistically, on a lot of the stats that we pull together for our weekly stats and the predictor, he absolutely tops virtually every stat.
Yeah.
And I think the final version of the predictor that you've pushed through him a long way ahead.
If you look at it from a points perspective, because what we do, we don't mention this nearly enough, Paul, on the podcast, our predictor models. Completely free of charge, no subscription. But basically, there's just variables for both PGA Tour and European Tour. So this week, resort scoring. So what kind of guys have a history of scoring well on golf courses where 18, 19 under is the minimum requirement from a scoring perspective. I've got a humidity tab on there this week, so you know what kind of players feature when the conditions are so hot and ridiculously humid, and it all forms this statistical model. If you're looking at Justin Thomas, you won't be surprised to hear he's number one. But listen to this score. He's on 2,431 points on my published model. Kevin Na is second at 1,368.
Mm. Yeah, that does put into context the, and quite rightly, is the standout favourite for the tournament. Mm.
But then I kind of have debates from that point. I'm seeing Ryan Moore at 12-1. Mm. That's a guy that's won here twice, granted, but he doesn't win nearly enough. Billy Horschel, I'm seeing as low as 12-1 this week. There's a little bit of 16s about Billy. That's interesting. If you're looking at red-hot form, Billy Horschel, there is no better at the moment, is there? Second at the Tour Championship, third at the BMW Championship, third at the Northern Trust.
Mm. Yeah, and we know he holds his form and can carry that on from week to week, but... that's a low price, isn't it? And yeah. He needs to make a lot of birdies this week to go over the line. So.
The golf course itself is tree-lined. It's very short, at just a snidge over 7,000 yards for a par 72. I mean, in modern parlance, that's there for the taking, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The West course and the scoring averages here are just incredible, really. 2014 or 2015, 47 for 50th in terms of difficulty rank, so the third easiest on the tour. 2016, 44 of 50, and last year, just a tiny bit firmer. There was no pick up, clean, and replace. It was 41st of 51 golf courses on the PGA Tour, so it's not a difficult test. But what we might see scoring move close to where it was in 2013 and 14, where it was kind of middle of the road. It was 28th out of 43 courses back in 2013. So we might see something of that ilk with these new Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens. But if you look at this, this has got some real trends to it. I mean, listen to these prices. Past five renewals since we've gone to the wraparound season, the average price here is 33-1 of the winner. If you look at all of the CIMB classics going back to 2010 with Ben Crane, the average price is 31-1. So straight away, that doesn't shout to me 5-1 winner.
No.
Pat Perez last year was 50-1. And actually, if you look at Pat Perez's price last year at 50-1, bearing in mind that he came into this tournament last year with form of 16th at the Tour Championship. So he made the Tour Championship, was 16th. He was also 12th at the BMW Championship and 6th at TPC Boston. So he was playing some great golf. He was also eating par fives. I think he was in the top 25 on tour for par five birdie or better. And that kind of trend is something I've really looked into. People that are clearly making hay on par fives. He was 20th for par five birdie or better last year. Justin Thomas, when he won in the CIMB Classic the second time, the season before was 30th for par five birdie or better. And when he won here originally, his first ever PGA Tour title, if you remember, back in 2015, he, the previous season, had finished first for par 5 birdie or better. So that really helps. It helps to unlock those par 5s. And a lot of the course changes they made have actually helped with the par 5s because they used to be quite difficult. The par 3s and 4s here are scorable, always have been. But the par 5s are always a little tricky to unlock. But now all of a sudden, with the changes they made here in 14, especially to the final hole, which basically made it a dead straight hole and a wider landing area, all of a sudden, the par 5 scoring's got a lot better. And I think that helps in terms of a lot of these power guys that can really get it out there and can birdie those four opportunities that they've got.
Yeah.
Winning prices, of course. Perez was 50s. Justin Thomas, when he defended, was 25-1. He was 25-1 when he won in 2015. And Ryan Moore was 33-1 both times he's won here. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of price. I'm trying to hunt the winner desperately this week. I've only gone for three. The other thing I did notice around this, all the winners of the CIMB have been ranked between 22nd in the world and 64th in the world, arriving in Kuala Lumpur. And you also get this anniversary scenario. I mean, this is pretty uncanny. If you think about it, Pat Perez won the OHL Classic in 2017. They were Paspalum Greens at the time. Yeah. He came here to more Paspalum Greens 11 months later and won the CIMB Classic. He's also, of course, done well at the likes of the Bob Hope Classic, where he's won. So, you know, he had a track record of performing well on low-scoring tracks.
Mm.
Thomas won here in 2015 and 2016. Clearly, in 2016, it was a year after he won here previously. He didn't win in between. And before, prior to that, 2015, his last PGA Tour... his last professional victory had been on the Web.com Tour in September, at the National Children's Open. And then you look at Ryan Moore. He won him in 2013. 12 months earlier, he'd won at TPC Summerlin. And he comes here again in 2014 and defends. So, you know, there's this weird statistic there that the past five winners have all done something in either September, October or November of the year prior.
Yeah, positive biorhythms potentially.
Yep, I can see that. I can definitely see that. So you've got the link with the world ranking. You've got this par five birdie or better scenario, and we've also got this situation of players that can kind of have got these biorhythms. So it's taken me down this track this week. At bigger prices, I was very, very interested in a couple of players this week. I think Austin Cook's going to go well at 80-1.
Mm.
We know that he's a winner on Bermuda, isn't he? He won the McGladrey Classic at Sea Island, yeah. The RSM Classic. And I think Cook's playing some very nice golf, hitting a lot of greens and a fantastic putter. And if you actually look at the key statistics here, it's interesting to see that the average across Moore, Thomas and Perez, the last five renewals, the average for putting average or putts per GIR of those five winners, they were fourth in the field. It's a putting contest, yeah?
Yeah, well, to get to that kind of winning score generally is, isn't it? You've got to have your putting boots on putting to be able to contest. Go 23, 24, 26 under. Mm. That's for sure.
Perez was 10th last year for putts per GIR. Mm. Matsuyama and Bradley, great ball strikers, can be competitive here. They can play. So, you know, we've had Adam Scott, Brendan Steele. Keegan Bradley was second last year. He was only 24th for putts per GIR. If he'd have actually putted reasonably well, he'd have beaten Perez. Hideki Matsuyama is the prime example. So many close calls here. But the trouble with Matsuyama, as ever, he can't get into the top 25 when it comes to putts per GIR around here. So yes, ball strikers can feature, but you've got to win this tournament, you've got to putt very, very well and have a track record on Bermuda grass greens and also greens, also tournaments where you can shoot low. So here's where I'm at. I've got 1.5 points each way, 40-1 on Cameron Smith. That is available with Unibet, who are five places a quarter of the odds. Just for punters, amazingly enough, again, Paddy Power have gone in this 78-man field, no cut. They've gone seven places each way at 50 odds, which I think decent. Is fairly... Oh, it's fantastic. No one else gets anywhere near that. Smith is interesting. He's finished fifth here twice. 2014... when he wasn't even known. He'd only just started playing professionally that year and had done some Asian tour stuff. He then came here last year and again and shot very low in the first round and the final round. I think he shot 8 under 64s, topping and tailing, and was fifth. Thing I like about Cameron Smith, if you're looking from his world ranking, he's 32nd, so spot on. You're looking at his price... Yeah. That price at 40-1, that's nice, isn't it? We know that Smith is a fantastic putter. You know my eight-week GIR tracker. He was terrible at the PGA Championship. But if you take that away and you look at his performances across the playoffs, he would be in the top seven in my rolling GIR tracker for greens and regulation, which for a player with his short game is unbelievable, isn't it? And the other thing that I was amazed with, you listen to this, fifth here last year, third at the CJ Cup. He then was fourth at the Australian Open, and he finally grabbed a win at Royal Pines on Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass, which hosted last year's Australian PGA Championship. From there on, this year, sixth at Riviera, quarterfinal spot at the World Golf Championship Dell Match Play. Again, Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass greens down there in Austin, Texas. Fifth at Augusta, third at Ridgewood, third at TPC Boston. If there's one guy in this field that goes well at this time of year, was a winner in early, late November last year on the European Tour, and clearly can play the course and has not won on the PGA Tour on a solo venture, because the win he has got on the PGA Tour was down in New Orleans when he teamed up with Jonas Blixt. So he's never won a PGA Tour event on his own. I just think Smith's in the right spot. I really do think he's in the right spot.
He was a decent player. As you say, he's in the right sweet spot in terms of OWGR and price for this as well. Yeah, it could be a bit of a dark horse at that one.
He was second here last year for putts for GIR. Now, I know that that changes because we've moved away from Paspalum, we've moved to Tiff Eagle Bermuda grass, but he can clearly read the greens and he's clearly comfortable on this golf course. He actually said in some interviews he did last year that the hotter, the more humid it is. He just loves playing in Asia because it just makes him feel like he's playing, you know, in the temperatures and conditions that he plays with back at home.
Yeah, he's just used to it, isn't he?
He's a Brisbane lad, so, you know, it's very, very hot up there on the Gold Coast. So Cameron Smith was one that jumped out. I actually thought for a guy that finished third as recently as TPC Boston, and third as recently as the as Ridgewood, the Northern Trust. So two playoff events with fields of the utmost quality. I thought 40-1 was a generous price on the basis that he's finished fifth here twice.
Yeah, yeah. Does there's a lot going for that that bet, I must say.
I've then plumped for Barry O'Hanrahan's. he's just a truther, isn't he, Barry, when it comes to this guy, Gary Woodland.
Yeah, well, once Barry hears the pod, he'll be flying off to one of those Vegas bookies to get his dollars down, I expect.
Get his 9-1 on Gary Woodland over in Las Vegas. Say, now, you'd probably get a better price over there. Yeah. I've got a note here from last year, right? And it says three golf courses. It says PGA West, it says Scottsdale, and it says Copperhead. And if you look at the likes of Justin Thomas, Ryan Moore, Pat Perez, they've all got top tens at those three golf courses. Gary Woodland, second at PGA West. Remember when he lost to Jonathan Vegas?
Yeah, yeah.
Johnny Vegas. That was when it was... what was it? They played over 5 days, didn't they?
And the Bob Hope,
back,
yeah.
Yeah, back then. He shot 33 under and came second. Scottsdale. Well, who won there this year? It was Gary Woodland, wasn't it? And who got his first PGA Tour victory at Copperhead? Gary Woodland.
It's all adding up, Stu.
It's crazy, though, if you think about it. And listen to this. And Barry's been talking about this. And we have noticed this over recent podcasts. This is Gary, because Gary, clearly, he's one of the best ball strikers on tour, yeah? Yep. He hits a lot of fairways, he's as powerful as you like. When he goes down to three wood, he can bang it 320 yards and pretty straight, yeah? So he's perfect for this golf course. But he can't putt. He's a very streaky putter, like most high-quality ball strikers, yeah? Right, putts per GIR, last three events, 11th, 16th, and last time out at the Tour Championship was 9th for putts per GIR.
it's good for him.
It's very good. And you think to yourself, well, okay, but what does that mean in new parlance? What does that mean in strokes gained putting, Steve? Well, he was 7th for strokes gained putting at the Tour Championship, and he was 22nd for strokes gained putting as recently as the BMW Championship at Aronimink. Oh, sorry, 15th for strokes gained putting. And if there's one thing Gary Woodland thrives on, your typical Scott Piercy, typical Ryan Palmer, he thrives on soft golf courses. Mm. He's one of these players that if you tell him a distance and a yardage and he knows he can get the ball to stop and the greens are fairly responsive to a yardage, he's deadly. Price isn't great, but I think that the bookmakers know that he's an identikit for this kind of golf course. Second here in 2013, second here in 2014.
Yeah, the credentials are there, aren't they?
I couldn't resist, unfortunately. He's 38th in the world golf rankings, hasn't won since February, and was 11th last season for par 5 birdie or better. So I couldn't resist him. Top, though, for me, and if you said to me, Steve, I'll shoot you, give me one for this week, it would have to be Xander Schauffele. And if you think about it from a biorhythms perspective, yeah, he won the Tour Championship, which was 54 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Came here 52 weeks ago and was, he shot 8 under in the first, oh, sorry, he shot 7 under in the first round, 65. He then shot 67-67 and went off second after 54 holes in the same group, clearly as Pat Perez. I just think he's due a win. He hasn't won now for a year, has he? Which on the PGA Tour, for a player of his quality, seems a long time.
Yeah, he's been knocking on the door, hasn't he? Particularly in some of these bigger events, hasn't he?
He was close at the Tour Championship, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Very close at Aronimink, which was sopping wet, softest golf course ever. And he only lost out by a shot to Justin Rose and Keegan Bradley, who made it into the playoff. And clearly he thrived on the golf course last year. He actually played in the same group as Justin Thomas, and they said to him after his first round of 7 under 65, he said, well, what did you do? He said, well, basically copied Justin Thomas and did everything that Justin did. Because he said I figured that what he does around here tactically must work.
Well, given that he's got two wins, it's a fair assumption, isn't it?
He's a great ball striker, isn't he, Schauffele? And he's putting really well at the moment.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He's just a top quality player. And he's that kind of player that on Sunday you'd go, his form is fantastic at the moment. If you actually look at what he's done this season, it's incredible, really, the consistency he's had. Second at the Players' Championship, Tiff Eagle, Bermuda Grass. 6th at the US Open and 2nd at the Open Championship. He was the closest player that got to Francesco, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's right. He had a chance to win it, didn't he, early on, and actually recovered well, didn't he, after dropping some shots early in the final round.
I think I counted them up. 6 top 5 finishes this season. 7 top 10s. Hasn't won. He's just due a win, and the golf ranking's right. And if you actually look at his numbers, he's 18th this year for par 5 birdie or better. So those are my three: Xander, Gary, and Cameron Smith.
Yeah, very good. One guy who caught my eye when we were talking about Justin Thomas topping a lot of these stats, but one of the guys from the Asian Tour, and I think, is it 10 have come across or qualified for this from the Asian Tour, courtesy of their positions on the on money list over there. One guy really caught my eye was John Catlin. He's
200-1
Californian guy, so he's an American playing over in the on the Asian Tour. And I'm not really, I don't follow the Asian Tour that extensively. I don't bet on it that much, to be honest. But it caught my eye. And just having a little dig into him, and it's it showed that he'd won four times in the last 12 months, three of them on the Asian Tour, one of them on the Development Tour before he got to that point. Two of the wins were in Malaysia itself, and he's coming here fresh off another win last week.
Really?
And you know, some of these wins aren't, you know, you look at the Asian Tour and go, oh, you know, he's beating very poor players. Well, you know, in July he beats Paul Peterson, who is a European Tour winner. Last week he beat Siwon Kim, who came third in the Indian Open earlier in the year on the European Tour. Yes, I know this is PGA Tour. I know there's some top players at the top end of this market. But looking at his stats, he's accurate, his greens, he scrambles well, putts well, doesn't seem to be a discernible flaw in his game. As to whether he can step up in any shape or form to this kind of level remains to be seen. But you're getting quotes of 200-1 and above from most of the bookies. He's trading close to 300 at the moment. Some of these guys can just, you know, make an impact when they step up, particularly when he's going to feel comfortable in the surroundings. He's already got a couple of wins in Malaysia. I'll be interested to see how he goes. So,
he's clearly hot, isn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, that one just to keep an eye on, I think. I'm not going to go mad with that particular bet, but it's worth just a few speculative pounds, I think, to see how he gets on. But yeah,
I would assume that there's going to be a lot of punters out there that do a very short win double on the likes of Justin Thomas and one of the guys, Tommy Fleetwood, for example, in the British Masters,
or Justin Rose,
or Frankie Molinari.
If you're gonna bet at the top of the British Masters market, then trying to pick one between those three is going to be the trick, isn't it? Which leads us on quite nicely to the British Masters, which we've seen for the last 3 years. The British Masters used to be one of the kind of mainstay events of the European Tour schedule. They used to play at places like the Belfry, Forest of Arden, Woburn. They used to play, but in fact, they used to play both the tracks at Woburn at various points. But it dropped right off the schedule, which was given for such a prestigious event. It was a bit of a shame, really. And then they've reinvigorated it 3 years ago when it went back to Woburn, and it's with this this kind of celebrity host status now, isn't it? So we've had Brad Poulter, we've had Luke Donald was at the Grove, wasn't he, when we went down there.
Is it confirmed that this tournament goes on from this year onwards? Have they stated that it's going on from 2019 and there's going to be played at X, Y and Z, or is it all a bit...
These were the original four, weren't they?
So
Westwood was last year, Justin Rose is the host this year. As to beyond this, I couldn't tell you. I know they've adopted the same idea with the Irish Open going forward. So they're not all going to be Rory hosted. They're going to be hosted by different Irish, Southern and Northern Irish players over the next few years. And they're going to be taking them to various courses over Ireland over the next few years, which will be interesting. But yeah, as to what they've done with this... I couldn't tell you offhand, but it'd be a shame if it.
But you'd hope, yeah, exactly. With the lack of action that we get over here in the UK, you'd hope that it sticks.
No, absolutely. And you know, it seems to have gone down very well. You know, the Sky Sports sponsoring it and throwing free tickets at the Thursday for the last few years, which they've done, and you and I have taken advantage of that and gone down and seen some of these courses, which has been nice. It'd be a real shame to knock that on the head, but we shall see. But yeah, this is Justin Rose's turn this year, so he's taken us to Walton Heath in Surrey, and that's off the back, as I said, the first three winners or first three events. Fitzpatrick won at Woburn at 33-1, Alex Noren won at the Grove at 18-1, and Paul Dunn is defending champion. He won at Close House last year at 66-1. Walton Heath actually used to be on the rotation for the European Open back in the day. So between something like 1978 and 1991, it was part of the rotation there, was used five times, I think. But it's a fairly tricky track. If you look at the winning scores from those events back in the day, minus 5 to minus 11 was the deepest that the scoring got for a par 72, which suggests that it's not a pushover by any stretch of the imagination. Hosted the 2011 Senior Open as well, which was won by Russ Cochran at 12 under, and the 1981 Ryder Cup. But when we tend to see this track or hear about it more often than not nowadays is when it's used for the US Open qualifying. They do sectional qualifying down there each year, which is well worth looking at. And in my preview, which will be out in the morning, I've linked to the last few years of sectional qualifying results, which is quite interesting because a fair number of this week's attendees have taken part in the sectional qualifying at Boulton Heath over the last few years. So where we've got a lack of current and recent course form in terms of tournament play, we still have some indicators as to the kind of players and those players who have gone well here over the last few years. And the track itself, 7,394-yard par 72. Slightly strange setup in that there's 12 par 4s, 3 par 3s and 3 par 5s, so not your regular par 72 setup. It's a Heathland track, but it plays very links in. If you listen to any of the interviews or read any of the transcripts from players who've played here in the past or know the course, they'll all refer to the linksy nature of the track. And again, I've put a flyover or a brief video on the preview, which you can check out from the links in the Podbean description, which shows you the track itself. And it is exposed. There's some trees there, but it's, you know, largely exposed heathland. Most of the trouble comes from off the fairways when you go into the heather. But it does look and feel very linksy. Big greens, firm and fast is the idea, the way that it's designed to be run. So we'll see how that plays this week. Obviously, we're getting quite late into the year over here in England. And the greens will be a little bit more receptive than they would have been earlier in the year because it has rained since the dry spell in the summer. We're expecting a little bit of rain over the weekend, actually, so that'll put a bit of a dampener on the weekend's play, but other than that, it should play really quite linksy, I think.
It would be easy to link it to Wentworth just for their physical location, and, you know, as regular visitors to Wentworth, we know that there's parts of that course that are very Surrey Heathland like.
Yeah.
Do you think it will play very similar, or do you think it's going to be a slightly different test, not quite as tight?
Well, off the tee, it won't be anywhere near as tight visually. I think the challenges in terms of veering off the fairway won't be that dissimilar. Instead of being blocked out by trees, you're going to find yourself in a thick heather that's going to cause you challenges trying to find the green. So
yeah.
I think the challenge from tee to green won't be dissimilar, but aesthetically, it's nowhere near as tight. I haven't been to Walton Heath, actually. You know, you and I have been to Wentworth a number of times, but this will be my first trip down to Walton Heath. And just looking at the video, it shows you how different the track actually looks. And as you say, given the proximity to Wentworth, you'd kind of almost lump them in the same bracket. But it's far more open. It is linksy. It's going to be a slightly different challenge visually.
But
I think in terms of skill sets required, and again, to going back to the Senior Open that was played here in 2011, the guys then, it didn't particularly lend itself to the longer hitters. It was more about hitting some, you know, a good proportion of fairways, maximizing greens and regulation. And I know we don't get the same level of depth of data on the European Tour or even the Senior Tour than you do in the PGA Tour, but I suspect that proximity was one of the key stats that week. And given the greens are one of the most challenging, if not the most challenging aspects of this track, then simply finding the green in regulation but being 60 or 70 feet away probably isn't going to help you a great deal, because three putts are going to be quite prevalent. And the average putts from the seniors when they played, there were some really quite nasty numbers they were putting together, so there must have been an awful lot of three putts out there.
Okay.
So I expect it will still come down to positioning off the on the fairway, finding the right parts of greens, finding, you know, getting the proximity as tight as possible to the flag, and then attacking that way. But yeah, given the winning scores we've seen, and say -5 to -11, that kind of bracket, and the fact that we're expecting wind speeds of around about 15, maybe up to 20 miles an hour for the Thursday and Friday, and that's an average, so there's clearly going to be some stronger gusts as well. It should make it quite interesting. I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't think it's going to be a birdie fest. Going back to the Senior Open again, which is really the only current data that we've got, Cochran was the only player who got more than 20 birdies over the course of the 4 days. So it's going to be a relatively challenging test, I think. And that kind of lends itself to a certain type of player. You know, it's, some players can't and don't have the patience to to kind of stick around and make pars when birdies are in short supply.
It kind of tells you where Justin Rose comes from, doesn't it? Because we know he's that kind of player, patient.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that goes way back to when he used to play as a youth.
Yeah, absolutely. High greens in regulation, you know, fairways, greens in regulation. You know, he's always been adequate putter on Ben Poa greens. These are actually quite Poa. They are Ben Poa, but they're quite Poa heavy. There's certainly a higher proportion of Poa than Bent in here.
Okay.
So think before they relayed the Wentworth greens, they were getting going that kind of direction as well. So
yep.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some correlation there between players who've played and putted well on higher density Poa greens in the past. And those that get their heads around the putting challenges that are here this week. Looking at the betting, it's no surprise really. Rose is the favourite around about 7-1. You've got Francesco Molinari at 10-1, Fleetwood at 10-1 as well. So those three are pretty much clear of the rest of the field in terms of the betting. Then you've got the likes of Matt Fitz, Olsen's here, Eddie Pepperell, round about the 25-30-1 mark, and then you into the likes of Lucas, last week's winner, 33, Shane Lowry. Lowry's interested. He's not been getting quite close enough to warrant a bet from me, but he's not a million miles away. And again, there's a bit of 33s around for him as well.
20-1 last week, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, he's priced prohibitively short for me. I can't, you know.
Traditionally, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, before I see the prices, I'll get an idea of the kind of player that I think is going to go well. And, you know, I can't dispute that Lowry could go well here this week, but I want more than that for a player that isn't really getting close to winning if I'm going to take a chance on him.
Mm.
Chris Wood's another one. He's slightly longer this week. There's a little bit of 40-1 around, but generally 33s. And again, if you look at the correlation between the old Wentworth greens and these ones, there's potentially something there. But he's going to have to find a lot of greens in regulation if he's really going to contest this week. Matt Wallace, you know, I've been on him an awful lot recently, and he was joint leader after the first round last week, so I was quietly hoping he was going to keep that going, but his long game didn't.
No, he fell away, didn't he?
He did. You know, from the bits that, I know, watching the Dunhill Links on the TV is painfully slow, but for the bits that I saw of him, he was his long game just seemed to be off, which I don't think you're going to get away with around here. You know, I could be wrong, but and he's been backed in from 45s, so there's not going to be a great deal of 45s left, if any, by the morning. I just doesn't feel right to me this week. One player who's been backed in massively so far today is Hao Tong Li, who's got a decent bit of form in those qualifiers, and you know, if we liken it to a Lynxy test, we know that there's some Lynx form from him, because he finished third at the Open a year ago, didn't he? So there's some correlation there as well, and clearly some punters are picking up on this as well.
He jumped out just looking at your analysis of guys that have clearly gone well within qualifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about qualifying, just looking at the last 3 years, this year just gone was the leading players at the end of qualifying were James Morrison and Andrew Beef Johnson. the year before, Aaron Rye led the qualifying from Haotong Li. That was the year that Li did well. Gregory Bordy the year before. And if you look at the likes of Rye, Bordy, Johnson, they're generally good tee to green exponents. They're not particularly long off the tee. They're just neat and tidy players. You've also got players of the likes of Matt Southgate. He did well this year just gone. Ryan Fox, both of those came through sectional qualifying here. So again, that kind of linksy angle with those two guys tells a story as well. For me, I think it's, you know, someone who has got the right mindset, the kind of grinding mindset potentially, has some links form, has some links heritage. If they've done well on sectional qualifying for this in the past, then great. It's not the be all and end all, because some players won't have played it, of course. But that feels like a positive indicator for me. I think there's a few things we can grab onto with this this week. Still relatively early in my thought process, but I have backed three players today. And they are Padraig Harrington, who I backed last week, finished 7th, 66-1. I've got on Paddy earlier today. And again, you know, I said at the top of the show, bogey free, 69, in tough conditions at St Andrews on Sunday. And when he does well, it tends to be these events where there are big greens, he can play recovery shots onto these big greens and still salvage a par or make a birdie potentially, get himself back into a positive frame of mind. You know, clearly we know about his links pedigree. There's no way to, no need to kind of go into that with him. But his last four events, he's finished second, fifth, missed cut, seventh. And again, he was over 80% at greens in regulation last week. I highlighted his GIR stats last week in the preview. And, you know, his greens, his irons are absolutely spot on at the moment in general. So I didn't see any reason to drop him from the team this week, I must say.
His GIR number last week was okay, wasn't it?
Yes, I said, yeah, 8th in the field, 80.6, I think it was, something like that.
Mm.
So I thought he was well worth having another go on, Harrington.
Absolutely. Yeah, I get that.
Beef Johnson I backed as well, 80-1. I said he won the qualifier here this year, or he was the joint leader at the end of the two rounds, 10-under, he shot over two rounds. With the qualifier, they play one at the old course, one at the new course, so only 18 of the 36 is actually on this track that they're playing this week. But clearly they're side by side and share a lot of similar characteristics. So he won the qualifier this year, 9th in the qualifier in 2017, 4th in the qualifier in 2016. Clearly gets on very well with the track. He's showing some bits of form. He closed with 67 in Portugal on his last start. He was 10th at the Nordea Masters. And again, I think if there's tougher tracks, tougher tests are the kind of thing that really suit him down to the ground. Clearly a winner at Valderrama a couple of years ago. He's not defending, but he's anniversarying that win next week.
Biorhythms,
absolutely. He's taking it seriously, Beef. He's in the gym, he's doing a lot of weights, he's trying to get himself into the kind of shape where he can contest and contend with some of the big boys in world golf, and good luck to him. But I thought, given the nature of the track and how well he's played around these parts in the past, that 80-1 was a fair price for him. And the final one I've backed is Lee Slattery. And again, he's got some decent form on this. On the qualifiers here, he was third in 2016. 14th this year, just missed out on qualifying. But in recent weeks, 10th at the Nordea Masters, 4th at the Czech Masters, 20th last week. And critically, last week, he was third for driving accuracy and first for greens in regulation over the whole field. So his long game looks like it's in decent shape as well. And there's just little pockets of form with him here and there. And when he does play well, he does tend to keep his form for a few weeks.
Yeah, he does,
175-1, I thought, was more than a fair price for Lee Slattery this week. I'll make a final decision on some other players. Jason Scrivener is another one I'm looking at quite closely. Eduardo Molinari is one that I think could surprise. He's at a long, long price as well, well over 200 to 1 with most bookies. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a nice little bounce from his brother's performance over the last few
weeks. Wasn't he contending last week?
Yeah, he's seventh going into Sunday, something like that. He was in decent shape. I think he shot 75 or something. Relatively poor on Sunday. But if you go back to when he won in 2017, it was at the it was Morocco, I think, wasn't it? And he'd done nothing. He'd been really poor, and then he produced a decent performance the week before. I forget exactly where it was. I think he finished 11th, 12th, something like that. And then kind of seemingly out of the blue, a massive price, gets the job done at the Hassan Dir Trophy. And as you say, he showed a bit of form last week. He was in decent shape. So going to this track, he's catching up with his brother for the first time since the Ryder Cup. Would it be a nice little bit of positivity flowing through the Molinari camp? Yeah, quite possibly. He could well be the one that I add to my team in the morning, actually.
So it seems like you're going for some nice value prices, yeah?
Yeah, I think if you could look at the top of the market and could I pick between a Justin Rose and a Francesco Molinari and a Tommy Fleetwood? You know, all those three guys could all win it. Of course they could. And I don't think you can construct a coherent staking plan that includes more than one of those guys. I don't think you can go each way on more than one of those guys or any of those guys. I think it's probably too short. So if you, unless you're going to play further down the market like I am, I think you'd probably have to pick one of them and put all your, virtually all your eggs in one basket. And that doesn't interest me. So let's try and make some money going a bit further down the list, I think. But yeah, that's kind of where I am at the moment. We'll see how that pans out with my final selections in the morning.
When are you picking me up? On Thursday morning?
off the floor after you've looked at the leaderboard.
Yeah.
So we'll be down at Walton Heath on Thursday. So if you see us milling around the bar area, then pop over and join us for a beer.
Yeah, if you want to see what we look like, although clearly I'm on the Golf Betting Show each week on YouTube, so as I said at the top of the show, give me a subscribe. Paul is available. You can see his visuals on our website, golfbettingsystem.co.uk, or on his Twitter handle. But if you do see us down at Walton Heath for the half an hour that we're actually walking the course, not in the bar, come and say hello.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. It looks like it's going to be a decent day.
The weather looks great, doesn't it?
Yeah, a bit soggy over the weekend potentially, but Thursday, Friday should be good. So
I do really like the sound of Harrington and Beef Johnson, because you've been talking about beef for a lot of times this season, and it's all about finding a course with him where it's prohibitively difficult, relatively, for the field. And this feels like it's his. We know he's high GIR, and we know that anything kind of around that sub 10 under mark, 10, 12 under, or even higher scoring than that, is perfect for him.
That's right in his wheelhouse.
That's
exactly where he likes. Last time I backed him was at the Indian Open, where he lost in a playoff to Matt Wallace.
Yeah. That was the one Griot was winning, wasn't it? And then he let me down again badly, Mr. Perfect Stats Man, Emiliano Griot, last week. God, he's a frustrating character, that chap. But yeah. What was the winning score there in India?
No, off the top of my head, I'd say 11 under.
That's a real nasty golf course, isn't it?
It's very strong correlation to this, and that again, that kind of points me in the direction of Matt Wallace. But again, I've got to bear in mind what I saw of his game last week, and tee to green, I don't think he can get away with what he was attempting to get away with last week. So, I may regret that. I think I'll steer clear. But with Beef, I think the game and the kind of the approach that's required to get around a track that is going to be quite challenging, I think is right up his alley. So, fingers crossed.
Cool. Well, we're looking forward to it. I'm sure plenty of listeners are. It's always good to have a tournament here in the United Kingdom, down here in the London area. So we're looking forward to going to that. Paul, thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Best of luck this week, Steve.
Yeah, thank you. I know next week you've got, and to you, I know next week you've got the Sergio Garcia 3-1 favourite event down at Valderrama.
Valderrama, yeah.
You'll be doing everything you can not to tip him.
And yeah, won't. Although it's, as a betting heat, it's a nice betting heat because there's a fair amount to grab onto in terms of course history and also the kind of player that does tend to get on with that kind of challenging track. So
yeah, and also it's deep into getting with the 115, isn't it, for card retention? Yeah.
Needs must.
Yeah. And next week we've got on the PGA Tour the KJ Cup.
CJ Cup, which
Justin Thomas won last year from Mark Leishman in a playoff. So two decent events next week. Thank you for your time, listeners. Again, of course, if you could give us a score on iTunes, that'd be much appreciated. And it's just good that the weekly content that we're putting out there, especially this podcast, is well received from you guys. So give us a follow. And give us a message if you're enjoying what you're listening to. Right, thank you. Good evening, Paul.
Cheers, take care.
And we will see you all again next week. Good night. Cheers.